Just, I know he's not here to hear these words, but I want to thank Pastor for asking me to do this. Always do appreciate these opportunities, and I don't take them for granted. So, also thank the sound guys who have dealt with some last-minute changes, and we've got our like miniature version of my PowerPoint up there, but hopefully I've used a large enough font that everybody should be able to see it, even though we don't have a full slide up there for you. So, I did use a large font for almost all these slides, and I will be, telling you about them, so hopefully it won't be an issue. All right, so for starters, I'm talking about Christ's requirements for discipleship. And one of the reasons for this is that every believer in Jesus Christ is supposed to be his disciple. And so on a Sunday morning like this for Sunday school, I'm sure everybody in here would be saying, yeah, I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, and I've put my faith and trust in him to save me. So in that case, it means we're supposed to be his disciples. But a lot of times we don't really give a great deal of thought to what exactly that means. Like, what exactly does it mean to be Christ's disciple? And Christ actually has a number of requirements that he has told his disciples. If you want to be one of my true disciples, you'll meet these requirements. And, or at least you'll be in the process of striving to meet those requirements. So I'm using a total of 5 passages. It's going to be a little bit different, but here are the passages. It's Matthew 10, Matthew 16, Mark 8, Luke 9, and Luke 14. And if you'll notice the way the passages are arranged, they are arranged in the order that you would find them if you turned in your Bible. Like if you just started at the book of Matthew and started turning, they are in that order. But the other order that they're in is the real order that I wanted to point out is that they're in chronological order. And so chronological order is basically the order that the instances occurred in time. So in the life of Christ, as they happened during his life in time, in history, that's the order that these are displayed. And if you look at the second one there, cross-bearing, there are 3 passages, and these are parallel passages. And if you're not familiar with the New Testament, I'm sure most of us are, being this is a Sunday school. But if you're not familiar, parallel passages are basically the same account recorded by a different author in a different book. So those 3 are talking about the same instance in the life of Jesus Christ, but 3 different men wrote about it in 3 different New Testament books. So that's why we have cross-bearing there with 3. The other 2 don't have parallel passages, the ones underneath cost and rewards of discipleship and counting the cost. As far as I'm aware, those are standalone passages that were not written about by any other authors of the New Testament. So the way I have it broken down is based on the passages, and those headings come straight out of a chronological Bible that I have. And the reason for the headings is simply that those are the focuses of what Christ is saying in those particular passages. So the first one is cost and rewards of discipleship. Christ is really talking about what you have to pay and what you receive in return for being his disciple. The second one is he's specifically talking about bearing your cross and what it means to take up your cross and follow him. And the third one is counting the cost, and he talks quite a bit about, for instance, who starts building a tower without first determining if they have enough financial resources to finish it, or who goes to war without first determining, am I going to be able to win this war? And if they decide that they can't, then first they'll send out basically a peace treaty to prevent themselves from being destroyed. And so what he's saying here in the third one is, counting the cost is, count the cost to be my disciple. Before you decide to follow me, make sure that you've done your, that in your mind you've evaluated, Is it worth the cost? Because being Christ's disciple is not easy. So before we get started, I'll open in a word of prayer, but this just gives you an overview of what we'll be talking about. And hopefully the PowerPoint won't be an issue, and we'll get through this all right. So I'll open us in a word of prayer. Lord, I thank you for the opportunity to talk about your word this morning. And I just thank you for those who've helped me get this set up. Pray that you just guide my words and thoughts as well. Pray that everything I say would be biblically accurate and would bring honor and glory to you and would represent your son well. I ask all of this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. So, first is cost and rewards of discipleship. And I've used Matthew 10, 37 through 39. So if you'll turn there, we'll start with this one. And some of these are going to require some additional like comments and explanations, and I'll do that at the end. I actually have several slides that have phrases used that you'll see is that are a bit, maybe not what we're used to saying in our modern English language. And so for that reason, at the end, they'll be explained further. So verse 37, this is in the middle of a conversation that Jesus Christ is having. And he starts by saying, "He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he that taketh not his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me. He that findeth his life for my sake shall find it." So we see there's a few things here. I know the font's going to be smaller on this one, but hopefully you can all read that. Basically, a man, according to Christ in this passage, a man or woman is not worthy of Christ. A quick comment here is that often in the New Testament, like in the Hebrew culture, they would address men. So the most of the Bible is written in the masculine, the he, the him, his, if a man this, a man that. And it's not saying that only men have to do these things. It's just saying that primarily Christ was speaking in a male culture and it's written in the masculine. So what I've done on the very first slide, and this is the only one I've done it on, just to make a point here. I did a man or woman, he or she, him or her, and it kind of gets to be annoying. So this is the only slide I've done that, and so everyone will hopefully have that in their head, that this is talking about any gender, either gender, and regardless of age or anything else. It's talking about all people who would be disciples of Jesus Christ. So bear with the first slide. So what he's saying is if a man or woman is not worthy of Christ unless they're willing to do certain things. And he breaks it down like this. First of all, if he or she loves anyone more than Jesus Christ himself. So if there's any relationship in their life that is more important than Jesus Christ, then they're not worthy to be a disciple of Jesus Christ because he requires absolute devotion. In other words, the relationship you have with Jesus Christ is supposed to be greater than any other relationship you have in this life. So that's the first one. The second one is, if he or she does not take up his or her cross. You can see why I didn't do this throughout the entire PowerPoint. If he or she does not take up his or her cross, they can't be Christ's disciple. And it's because doing what Christ asks of us, that is bearing our cross, is also very important, and you can't truly be Jesus Christ's disciple unless you're willing to take up your cross. Third, he or she does not follow after Christ. So not only do you have to bear what he tells you is your particular cross to bear, you have to actually follow him as well. And I'll get to that in more detail later, because in the first century, he actually physically meant follow him in many cases, but for us who are unable to physically follow him, since he's not here anymore on earth, and he's in heaven, means something different. And I'll get to that later. And fourth, he or she finds his or her life outside of Christ. The idea of finding life is like the source of your pleasure and enjoyment, your fulfillment and all of that. And he's saying if you are going to find your life, you're the source of your fulfillment, your joy, what means the most to you outside of me, outside of a relationship with me, as Christ would be speaking, then you're not worthy to be my disciple either, even if you have done the first three. But then he adds, if a man or woman loses his or her life for Christ's sake, then he or she will find it. Essentially saying that when you're willing to put your relationship with Jesus Christ above any other pursuit, at that point, you've lost your life. He's not necessarily talking about physically dying, but he's talking about counting your life as if it were dead. When you do that, then you'll find your life. And what he means by finding it is that your walk with him will become so important. That will become your life, and that will captivate every aspect of your life. And you'll have found new life in Jesus Christ, which is what he wants of all his disciples. So here's the first thing. The first passage broken down. So, a man is not worthy of Christ if, look at these in a little bit more detail, he loves anyone or values any relationship more than Christ himself. So, in Hebrew time, the family was more important than it is even in our culture. It was like super important. And so Christ is making it very clear here in this passage, father or mother, son or daughter, it doesn't matter. You know, this is Father's Day, and you know, we're thinking of like, you know, relatives and everything as being important and honoring our fathers. But Christ is saying here, if you love your father or mother more than me, you're not worthy to be my disciple. Same goes for son or daughter, because it's that important that Christ wants his disciples to know, if you want to be a follower of me, it's an all-consuming passion. It's not a part-time job. It's not something you do on the side. It's actually your life. And if you have any other relationships that are more important than your relationship to me, then you're not worthy of me. Next is not taking up the cross. We're going to talk more about that later. This phrase is found in all of the passages, all five passages that we're discussing today. The idea of taking the cross is found in all five of them. Talk more about that later. He does not follow after Christ. This one I think is found in all five as well, if I remember correctly. He finds his life outside of Christ, and I believe this one, all but the last one. And again, finding life, the idea of finding life, losing life, saving life, all of that in the first century could also refer to physically being martyred. In other words, losing your life for Christ's sake and the fact that you were killed for your faith, but not so much for us today. So it's more of a losing your life in the sense of being willing to count it as not worth anything to you. All right, so then he ends with, if a man finds his life outside of Christ, he'll lose it. Essentially meaning, if you're not willing to make your relationship with me the focal point of your life, if you're not willing to lose your idea of a good life for me, you're going to lose your life, essentially. But if you do count your life as dead and you're willing to put your own ideas of what your life should be aside and let Christ become your consuming passion, in that case, you'll find your life. So next we have cross-bearing, which is found in three different passages. So turn first off to Matthew 16 and verse 24. Again, it's kind of nice the way these are in order that you find them in the Bible, but that's not the reason I have them in this particular order. It just so happens to be that the New Testament, like the Gospels, are in somewhat chronological order sometimes. And so this just happened to work out really nicely that we're going to go in order, but they are in chronological order, and that's why they are the way they are in this PowerPoint. And why we're looking at them in this particular order as well. So Matthew 16:24, this is actually a passage I used in a sermon about maybe 15 months ago or so, and I actually stuck just to this one and just made a few comments on the other two. But in verse 24, Jesus is talking to not only disciples, but also a crowd of people who probably included people who were not his disciples. We'll know that from the Mark and Luke passages. But he says here, then said Jesus unto his disciples, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall man give in exchange for a soul? So in this particular passage, there's a few things that are added. Denying yourself has been added. And that in itself is a whole new thing. I'll make a few comments on that later. He also talks about losing your soul, right? He's like, what good does it do a man if you sacrifice your soul for the gain of things on earth? And that in this particular passage is probably talking about those individuals who were there that day who were not trusting in him for their salvation. And those people were sacrificing their eternal soul for the temporal, which is the things that you can gain here. So we'll talk more about that later. Mark 8, 34 to 37 is the next one. And again, all three of these are the same event, the same account of Christ's life, just being written about by three different authors. And Mark 8:34, this is why it is apparent that not everybody he was speaking to this day was actually a true disciple of his, because it says, "And when he called the people unto him, with his disciples also," verse 34 says, meaning that the disciples were not a part of these other people. They probably were a member of the same group, all standing there listening to him, but they were not true followers of him. So, "And when he had called the people unto him with his disciples also, he said unto them, Whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. Whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? What shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" So, essentially, what Christ is saying here is the same thing in the other passage, but I think he adds that you need to lose your life for his sake and the gospel's. So I always found that interesting, that he said, not only are you losing your life just for your relationship with me, but also for the sake of the gospel. And what's very interesting about that is the gospel is central to Christianity as a whole, and Jesus Christ is the central figure of the gospel as a whole. So it's almost like if you're losing your life for Jesus Christ, well, no wonder you're also losing your life for the gospel, because Jesus Christ, you have no gospel without Jesus Christ. I mean, it's just, you don't have it. So he basically, Mark recorded that Jesus also said, "Lose your life for my sake and the gospel's." And next is Luke 9:23 through 25. And this one I also find interesting because he adds taking up your cross daily in this passage. Luke writes that in verse 23. So in verse 23, "And he said unto them all," here it doesn't distinguish whether they're disciples or not, he just said, "and he said to them all," so whoever was listening to him that day, "if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. But whosoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall save it. For what is a man advantaged if he gain the whole world and lose himself or be cast away?" So, starting to sound kind of repetitive, same thing over and over again. But the reason I read all three is because each one adds some new stuff. Here we have him saying, take up your cross daily. So we know that it's not just an occasional thing that you do. You don't just take up your cross once when you get saved and think that, okay, now I've taken up my cross and we're good. But it's actually something that you do on a regular basis. In fact, it's something you're supposed to do every day, because Christ even said right here, take up his cross daily and follow me. So, looking at the PowerPoint again, we have this broken down. The first requirement here, according to these passages, is for self-denial. The second one is taking up cross daily. Third, following Christ. Fourth, not attempting to save your life outside of Christ. And then he adds, if a man tries to save his life outside of Christ, he will lose it, because that's what Christ said. Basically, you try to save what you have, you're going to lose it. But if a man loses his life for Christ's sake, then he will find it. So he's saying again, just like he did in the Matthew 10 passage, this one not being the same as the Matthew 10, I should say these three passages, not being the same account as in Matthew 10. He adds again, you try to save or find your life outside of Jesus Christ, relationship with him, then in that case, you're going to lose it. But the opposite is true. If you find your life in Jesus Christ, if you lose your life, that's when you find your life in Christ. So looking at these, we have whosoever will come after Christ, here's what they have to do. They must deny themselves. Difficult to do, right? Take up his cross daily. Follow Christ. If a man tries to save his life outside of Christ, he will lose it. But if a man loses his life for Christ's sake and the gospel's sake, then he'll find it. Again, the reason I have these on all these different slides is to really break it down how each passage is different. You know, each example or each situation in the life of Christ is a little bit different, and it has been recorded differently. So by splitting them up, hopefully it shows not just the things that have been included. It says, because what good does it do a man in the world and lose his own soul? So here in these passages, he's talking about salvation. Because obviously a believer in Christ is not going to lose his soul. So he's saying, if you try to gain everything in this world at the expense of your soul and go to hell, it's not worth it. Or what can a man give in exchange for a soul? And he's saying that you cannot trade anything in this life for your soul. There's nothing that's valuable enough to trade so that you could say, oh, I'll give up my soul or I'll earn my soul by trading this thing, whether it's a physical thing or an accomplishment or achievement or whatever it might be. Nothing is able to be traded for your soul. And he's saying, what can a man give in exchange for a soul? And really the answer is, there is nothing. So counting the cost is the third passage, and this is in Luke 14, 25 through 33 are the verses. This is a lengthier one. And really in this one, it's interesting how Christ is saying that he wants you to think about the cost before becoming his disciple, because it's kind of opposite of how witnessing takes place these days. These days, it seems that some people want a person to pray a prayer very quickly without really having thought it through. And Christ is just the opposite. In fact, he sometimes turned people away during his earthly ministry, telling them, you have to go do something like sell all of your things and give to the poor before you can come to me. And in here, in this passage, he basically says, you better really think about it before you come and follow me, count the cost. And he uses several examples that they could understand, several first century examples. So starting in verse 25, we'll see the conversation he's having here. And there went a great multitude with him, and he turned and said unto them, so he's got another great, like huge crowd following, and this was typical. Christ had people following him all the time. Some of them were true followers, some of them were just there to see miracles, some were there because it was, you know, like a fascinating thing. This Christ was a really captivating figure, and people were thronging him all the time just to see what he would do. And there went great multitudes with him, and he turned and said unto them, if any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Pretty strong words there. And whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you intending to build a tower sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? And he means like sufficient funds, sufficient resources. Lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king going to make war against another king sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000. Or else, while the other is yet a great way off, he sendeth an ambassage and desireth conditions of peace. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath cannot be my disciple. All right, so he adds a bunch of relationships here. It's almost like he's saying, earlier in my ministry, I told you father, mother, son, or daughter. Now we're going to add a bunch of them. And here, if you'll look, he says, father and mother, wife and children, brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also. And so we'll talk more about that later as well. But looking at this passage, there's five things he says. First of all, you can't be Christ's disciple, according to him in Luke 14, if you love anyone or value any relationship more than Christ himself, value your own life more than your relationship with Christ, you don't bear your cross, don't come after Christ, and don't forsake everything that you have. So pretty high standards to be Christ's disciple. I wonder, oftentimes, you know, when people are praying these like sinners' prayers, hopefully they're meaning it, because Christ is saying, in order to be my disciple, you got to do a lot of very difficult things. And again, some of this is specific to the first century, I think. We'll talk about that in the slides upcoming. And some of these things are probably not quite as relevant, in the sense of we're not physically, you know, threatened with losing our life and everything, and as the other passages say, and we're not necessarily called to forsake everything we have to the extent of getting rid of all of our possessions, but that could possibly be part of it. We each have our own unique cross, and so that's why some of this is relative to an individual and what Christ has called them to do. But first, we see a man cannot be Christ's disciple if, here's the entire list, he loves anyone or values any relationship more than Christ himself. He lists basically all of the close relationships that you could list. Interestingly, since he was talking to men, he didn't list husbands on there, which I didn't notice. He only has wife. And so I guess that's because, again, in a male-dominated society, you're mainly talking to the men. They're not going to have husbands. So they're going to have one. This day and age, you can have husbands. Day and age. He loves more than himself. They're not going to come after Christ. He has some more. In review, we pass all five passages. Being a Jesus Christ, of the five passages, meaning that they're mounting slight, talked about, or written by different authors in different books. And the first and third ones are standalone passages, in that they have no equivalent recording in another book. He talks about cost and reward of discipleship in the first one, cross bearing in the second, and specifically counting the cost of discipleship in the third. So in the first passage, which is Matthew 10, as a review here, a man is not worthy of Christ if he loves anyone or values any relationship more than Christ himself. He does not take up his cross, does not follow after Christ, and or he finds his life outside of Christ. But if a man loses his life for Christ's sake, then he'll find it. Second group of passages, whosoever will come after Christ. So he's saying, if anyone wants to follow me, here are the things I expect of a would-be follower: deny himself, take up his cross daily, according to the Luke passage, follow Christ, not attempt to save his life outside of Christ. Again, says if a man tries to save his life outside of Christ, he will lose it. If a man loses his life for Christ's sake, then he will find it. So we see a lot of repetition here in what Christ expects across all these passages. Third one, once again, a man cannot be Christ's disciple if, goes back to valuing of relationships. He loves anyone or values any relationship more than Christ himself, values his own life more than Christ himself, does not bear his cross, does not come after Christ, doesn't forsake everything that he has. So the forsaking everything that he has is a new one, not found in any of the other passages, but Christ adds that in Luke 14 as something that is required in order to be his disciple. So, further explanation, had to put that in there. Hating other people. If you look in these passages and you see, he that does not hate father and mother and son and daughter and all that, and it probably looks a little odd, you know, like, why is Christ talking about hating people? I mean, Christ, throughout his ministry, talked about loving people over and over and over again. What did he say? He said, Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. So we're supposed to love God. We're supposed to love our neighbor. He also said, a new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. This is how all men basically will know that you're my disciples, if you have love one to another. So we love the brethren. And then he said, love your enemies. Pray for them that persecute you and despitefully use you or whatever. So clearly he's talking about loving God, loving neighbors, loving enemies, loving disciples, loving everybody, right? So why is he talking about hating people? It just seems kind of like counter, like what his teaching is. And if you look in more detail at what this passage is saying, both the Matthew 10 and the Luke 14, where he talks about hating your relatives, he's not saying that I want you to hate your family. He's just saying that the devotion that a person needs to have to Jesus Christ needs to be so great, it appears to others as if they hate their own family or even their own life. It's not saying that a person, in order to be a good disciple of Christ, needs to hate people, because obviously that would be very counter to what Christ has taught throughout his earthly ministry. He's not saying hate people and as a result love me. He's saying, no, love me so much that what people see is that it's almost like you hate your family. And again, family was super, super important to Jewish people in the first century, which is when Jesus' ministry was. Next, denying yourself. This is one that when I spoke on this last time, I didn't really explain much about it. And part of that is because there's not a lot given by Christ on denying yourself in these passages. He says to deny yourself, but what exactly does it mean? Like, when you deny yourself, what exactly are we denying ourselves of? I mean, you could deny yourself of things that are good. You could deny yourself of things that are bad, sinful, whatever. And he doesn't really explain much here. Like, what does it mean to deny yourself? Like, it's a requirement, so we should at least know what is he talking about. And I think, most simply, self-denial is just denying yourself of anything that is scripturally wrong. And I know that's a very broad and general way of explaining it, but we don't have a lot of details. So that's what I think it is. And on a second level, you could almost say denying yourself of something that to you is wrong. And an example would be we're told to only consume things to the extent that we need them. So food is something that every single person here has to eat to survive, right? Like, there's no reason any of us are going to be able to go for extended periods of time without eating, simply because it's a requirement of our bodies to live. And I don't think Christ would ask people to deny themselves of food to the point where they're going to become malnourished or anything like that. But the thing is, some people, because of their gluttony, probably could stand to deny themselves of food at times, whether it's certain types or certain amounts, right? And so denying yourself for one person, it might look very different from denying another person's self-denial. Again, nothing specifically stated in Scripture, so we're kind of left to use other passages to give clarity to this self-denial. And we're also kind of left to other biblical principles to just figure out what exactly does Christ mean by denying yourself. What I read in commentaries usually focused on the bearing of the cross and not on the denying yourself, which is kind of lacking an explanation, I think, probably because they also are not exactly sure what was Christ saying by denying yourself. Next is taking up and bearing your cross. This one actually has a lot of historical significance, because in the Roman Empire, one of the ways that they would execute criminals was by crucifixion. And the Romans had a practice that the person that they were going to execute would carry their cross to the place where they were going to be killed. So in the first century, when Jesus said, take up your cross, this was almost like an offensive term, like, take up your cross. Like, what are you calling me, a criminal? Because Nobody carries a cross except for someone that's about to get executed. So for Christ to say, take up or bear your cross, and if you don't do this, you can't be my disciple, it's actually kind of a shocking statement to make. It's almost like in our current day and age, if we were saying, like, use the electric chair or something, because only criminals get put on that. You don't tell people to go to the electric chair, right? Because that's only for people condemned to death. Well, the same goes with bearing your cross. In the first century, people would have thought, like, what does he mean, bear a cross? Like, that's nuts, because that's execution. Well, I think, again, it's the same thing as hating father, mother, son or daughter, wife, brother, sisters, etc. Not everybody is going to physically be carrying a cross and getting executed. But interestingly enough, of Christ's disciples, I think 10 of the 12 were martyrs. Only John, the apostle, didn't die as a martyr. Judas committed suicide, so he gets eliminated from the list. So I guess we're at 10 of 12 died as martyrs. So in the first century, taking up your cross, being willing to be a martyr, actually meant you might have to be willing to be a martyr to follow Christ. For us, taking up our cross is a little bit different because people don't die via crucifixion these days. It's not a crime necessarily to be a Christian, though I think sometimes society wants us to believe that it is. It's not a crime. So taking up or bearing your cross pretty much means being willing to sacrifice your life if that's what God's called you to do. In the first century, it very well may have meant die, because that's what a lot of Christians did in the first century. They were either crucified or put to death, executed in some way. For us, it's probably more like talking figuratively, as in take up your crosses and bear whatever burdens Christ has called you to bear, whatever your particular cross is. Following Christ, this one again has more significance historically, because in the first century, following Christ literally meant following Christ around, like walking where he walked, going where he went, doing what he did. We don't have that option anymore because Christ is now in heaven. We're here in the 21st century. We can't physically follow Christ anymore. So following Christ for us these days basically means obeying his commands, doing what he said that we should do. Whole different topic, doing what Christ said. A lot could be said there. But following Christ for us means do what he said to do, follow his commands, follow his example, strive to be like he was, because he is our great example. So following Christ doesn't mean for us to try and physically do everything he did, but rather to emulate his life to the extent that we are called to do so. Whole nother topic. Losing, finding, and saving your life. I pretty much talked about that as we got to it. But in the first century, losing your life versus saving your life could have actually meant dying versus living. And that's because a lot of Christ's disciples did become martyrs. For us, probably not so much, unless you live in a communist country or some other place like that. Losing versus saving your life is more in a sense of being willing to count your life as worthless for the cause of Christ, to the point where you're willing to say, if I had to lose my physical life to follow Jesus Christ, that'd be a sacrifice I'd be willing to make. And finding your life, I'd have to research the words in the Greek more to actually know if this is the case, but I kind of look at it as losing and saving is, losing is like being willing to count it as lost, whereas saving is it being found. Whereas finding, I kind of look at finding as the source of your, like I said earlier, the source of your joy, the source of your fulfillment, whatever drives you, whatever motivates you, that's where you find your life, right? Like you see some players and you're like, they're alive on the field, right? Like they're just like, they're passionate about playing that sport. So when they're out there, they're truly living, right? Well, they found their life. They found what causes them to be motivated. And so that's how I kind of look at finding. Again, I don't know biblically if that is exactly the meaning. I have to look into that more. But that's some explanation on losing, finding, and saving your life. And lastly, forsaking everything. Interestingly enough, sometimes Christ called people to literally forsake everything. In other words, a rich young man came to him one time and wanted to be his disciple, and Jesus Christ basically said, sell everything that you have and give to the poor. And the man was like, terrible, Jesus literally told forsake everything. I was unwilling to do. This is not what I didn't forsake. When you think everything, it's more of a mindset. It's more of like, if you were called to go someplace, some remote place as a missionary or whatever, and forsake all of the, you know, great things we have in America, you should be willing to forsake all of that and do it. That's more like what it's talking about for us. It's not saying that every believer has to forsake everything that they have, though some believers might have to forsake everything that they have, especially in certain times during history. But for us, it's more or less talking about having the mindset, like Paul said, he counted everything as lost, right? Everything that he once held dear, counted as lost. So that's kind of the attitude that Christ is saying here, and this one comes from the Luke 14 passage, and that is, be willing to forsake all that you have for my cause, and if you're not willing to do that, then you can't be my disciple. So this is the last slide that I have, but in closing, just think about basically the requirements that Christ has laid out for his disciples. I mean, this is even more than I realized when I first started studying this. Like, when I first started studying it, I knew most of this, but at least I'd heard the requirements. But I didn't really like understand to what extent Christ is calling people to follow him. He's basically saying that there should be absolutely nothing out there, whether in terms of relationships or material possessions, that means enough to you that would prevent you from fully devoting yourself to my cause. And so he's listed quite a few things and stated them different ways and sometimes added to them, and basically to make sure that his disciples know, if you want to be my disciple, you have to count the cost, and there's a lot of very great costs that you might potentially have to pay. Not always, not all the time, especially not for us in this day and age, but both in the first century and in our current day and age, we are required to sacrifice to a degree in order to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. So with that in mind, I'm going to close, and hopefully that doesn't leave more questions unanswered than answered. And we'll close in a word of prayer.